The Life and Times of Martin Bench, Part 2.
I left Abbey Road in 1970, and the Beatles had just done the Abbey Road album, and I felt it was time for me to experience some other things in life apart from the inside of a recording studio, because it's pretty intense. And I just met Jeannie, my wife-to-be, and we wanted to do some travelling. And so we went off travelling for a year. And at the end of that stint, both of us wanted to go to Australia just to see, you know, what the other side of the world's like. And working holiday for a couple of years. Anyway, we got to Sydney and we were completely broke. Having been travelling for a year, we'd spent all the money that we had, and I needed a job, you know. So I walked into the EMI studios in Sydney and said, look, I mean, you don't know me, my name's Martin Bench. I used to work for EMI in London, and I'm a recording engineer. How about, you know, considering me for a job in the studio? And they took me on. And so I worked there for, many, many years, actually. But worked with a number of different artists. One of the artists that lured me over to America was Michael Franks. And that's how I ended up in the States, doing some work with Michael.
Okay.
At Bearsville Studios. Yeah, near Woodstock, and we did an album out there, which was great fun. Recorded in Australia and New Zealand, and then we took all the master tapes back to Bearsville and did all the post-production, editing, mixing, mastering over there.
I know today's your birthday, and I did not buy no rose, but I wrote this song instead, and I call it Popsicle Toes. Popsicle Toes. Popsicle Toes, I always froze. Popsicle Toes. You're so brave to expose all those popsicle toes. You must have been Miss Pennsylvania with all this poker too. How come you always low your Pentax when I'm in the news?
You're listening to an episode of The Life and Times Of, and my guest today is Martin Bench, who has had a life of recording many of the world's great artists, including the Beatles when he was at the Abbey Road Studios. He's also worked with other talented people, like Michael Franks, and this is one of the hits that Martin engineered, Popsicle Toes. Now, let's fast forward a bit. You go to America to work via Australia. And did you get to work at the iconic Capitol Records in LA?
I did a couple of times, but I didn't actually record anything in Capitol Records. I was more or less an observer there on a couple of sessions with Al Schmidt of Recording, who's an eminent sound engineer. I was there as a kind of an EMI. I was there on an EMI conference at the time and sat in with Al Schmidt on a couple of his sessions, and I just realised what a great room that actually was. Beautiful studio. The domain of artists like Frank Sinatra, Peggy Lee. Some of my favourite artists actually have recorded in that Capitol Studios building. But when I went back to EMI in the UK later in my career in the 90s, I used to go to Capitol quite often, but more in a kind of a management and strategic point of view, from a question of re-equipping the studios and bringing it up to date, rather than actually sitting at the console doing sound recording, because my career took a couple of twists and turns away from mixing and recording into the more into the management and design of studios, which is, again, a fascinating area.
After all this travelling, working in Australia and the States, it's time to settle down. You and Jeannie get married.
We got married, and then we moved to Australia, and because I've spent most of my recording career in Sydney. Mm-hmm. That was my base, and most of my work in Australia over many, many years was in the old EMI studios in Castlereagh Street, which later became Studios 301, all part of the EMI organisation. And I was a staff balance engineer, recording engineer there for many, many years before I went out on my own, started my own production company. Mm-hmm. And did a whole lot of productions with bands like Crossfire, and I worked with Michael Franks in that capacity as well as an independent, and did many, many sessions in that room as well as the other studios in Sydney as well. Mm-hmm. Because the artists like to go to different facilities. Paradise was another studio that I did a lot of work in. Tin Pan Alley over in North Sydney was another one. Mm-hmm. And so I was moving around doing sessions in different studios in Sydney for many, many years.
So what brought you down here to the South Coast?
Well, I guess I'd been in the industry for a long time, and I felt like kicking back a bit, really, and doing less. And so I started getting involved in projects which were mostly about repurposing old studios into the new kind of requirement of technology and business. Mm-hmm. Because the internet, and in particular things like iTunes and the streaming, had completely changed the music industry. And my job, as it was, as a recording engineer for hire, was changing so much that I didn't feel really I really had a great future, you know, for my family, economically, whatever, and that it was time to move on into the management and the design and business side of the recording business, but focused on studios. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I did. And once I'd done that, of course, it freed me up from having to be in a certain studio at a certain time for a certain period. I could work from anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I set myself up down at Jervis Bay with what I needed, and I was able to spend a few days a week in Sydney and then the rest of the time down here and enjoy this wonderful lifestyle that's on offer in this part of the world. Cause you ain't getting past this heart of mine. I'm out here waiting for you with all I've got to give, and I accept this life we live. I'll be your lover.
Now you're setting up studios and helping independents, but the recording landscape has changed incredibly since you started some 40 years before.
It's all about really what you hear and understanding, you know, what your ears are telling you, and being able to judge a sound and being able to know how to change it if you wanted to change it. Now you can go and you can go out and you can buy a laptop and you can buy some mics and a couple of converters, A to D converters, and you can have a recording studio of the highest quality for a few thousand dollars outlay. Mm. But it's what you do with it that counts. And you certainly can do an awful lot of work, good work, with a very, very basic setup. You don't need to have, you know, a 72-channel mixing desk and a huge control room and acres of floor space to record an orchestra, unless you're doing that kind of work. And so the studios now, the bigger studios, have found that their business model now really must include film scoring, mm-hmm. a great acoustic space for orchestras and for recording bands, because those are the type of spaces where you get these amazing sounds that you can't get in a bedroom and you can't get in a digital box. Mm. the acoustics and the interaction of the room with the instruments that are playing is crucial to producing great sound. Mm. So there's definitely a place for good recording studios. It's just that we don't need so many of them now because there's lots of different ways to make records. Mm. And a lot of the time during the making of a record, you can be doing it at home in your bedroom on your laptop.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the crunch and you want great acoustics and you want, say, good monitoring where you can actually turn it up loud and have a really good listen on great speakers, that's where the recording studio situation comes in. Mm. So there's great value still in those facilities, but they're just not as in demand as they used to be, you know, back in the 60s when the only way to make a record was to go and hire a studio.
Yeah.
We're now getting into the autumn of your years. What's life hold for Martin Benz now?
It's a funny thing, you know. People say, well, look, when you retire, you know, you're going to have time on your hands. I don't have
any
time.
It's a myth.
Well, I've got all sorts of things going on in my life, which I'm very excited about and very grateful for to having the opportunity. And one of them is doing my little gig here at 92.7 Bay and Basin, because I never imagined that I would ever get involved in radio.
Oh.
But this happened through playing golf. And this is where I met Roy the Boy, because Roy was a keen golfer.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd been playing golf one day, and he was showing me everything that was wrong with my game, and I was thinking of throwing in the towel. And we were in the bar one evening at the club, and he said, well, what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I'm a sound engineer. And he said, have you ever recorded any dance music? And, you know, traditional ballroom dance music. And I said, well, yes, I did. One of the first recording sessions that I ever did at Abbey Road was with Sidney Bowman's Old Time Dance Orchestra. And I'll never forget that session. Straight to two-track stereo, incidentally, no mixing.
Wow.
And he said, well, why don't you come onto the program, my radio program, next week, and if you've got a copy of it, we'll play it, and you can talk about it.
Mm.
So I came in, and I was a kind of a guest on his show, and we played Sidney Bowman's Dance Orchestra, playing Don't Dilly Dally on the Way. Roy thought it was marvellous, and a few other listeners rang up and thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked about the recording session and various other aspects of what I'd been doing. And then Roy said, well, what are you doing next week? And I said, well, you want me back, do you? He said, you bet. So that was the start of a wonderful friendship.
Yeah.
And a relationship with Bay and Basin FM, which I signed up for as a volunteer. And that was 20 years ago, nearly. Yeah, and I'm ever so grateful for it. And then if I'm not in the studio here broadcasting, I play golf, and I've learnt a lot from Roy. He taught me about the music from the 30s and the 40s, which I'd basically ignored for many years, apart from when I used to play the 78s at Mum and Dad's place when I was a kid. Getting involved in learning about that, you know, that era of music was a wonderful thing, and it gave me a great appreciation of things that we talked about earlier, songwriting and great tunes and melodies and so on and so forth, you know, so I'm lucky. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm swimming. We have a swimming club that I'm a member of. So between the radio and the swimming and the golf and socialising generally, and I love tinkering around with my cars and stuff at home in my workshop, so I'm a busy man.
Martin, we're nearly at the end. One more piece of music to play, save the best for last. It's Crazy by Patsy Cline. Why this?
Well, there is, yeah. And that comes to my time, really, here at 92.7. My predecessor crazy. On the show, Roy Shute, or otherwise known as affectionately Roy the Boy, loves Patsy Cline. And I do too. I've never really got into her music in a big way, but we started playing Patsy Cline tunes on the show. And I just thought, you know, she was the most fantastic singer. And she is, or was rather, a short life, unfortunately, tragically ending. But she was a fantastic singer. And so my introduction to Patsy Cline came probably, you know, just within the last 20 years. And I've come to really admire her work.
You'd leave me for somebody new. Why do I let myself worry? Wondering what in the world did I do? Oh, crazy for thinking that my
thank you, Martin, for sharing your life and times with us today. It's been an absolute joy.
I reckon I'm a bit of a lucky bloke because I found something in my life which has been just of such incredible value, and it's been a privilege to work in this industry and be paid for it. You know, I mean, I've been the luckiest man alive, and I've had the best job in the world. That's the, you know, the only conclusion you can make. And I think it was more by luck than anything else that I found myself in that situation and managed to make the most of it.
Well done, Martin Bean. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.